Number space is 20 days each, wherever you can find them. You have a space to send your writings, just have to give it to Om Jai Tirunandasya, Jaya Jaya Sulataya, Chaksu Sumurutanjaya, Tasmai, Sri Hidhari Nama, Sri Chaitanya Mahavishkam, Kapitam Jaya Mithana, Vaya Mithakura Nama, Rajasi Sulataya.
Once a couple of years ago, Dhruva Maharaj was placed into difficulty, and somehow, by good association, by good advice, he turned that difficult situation into something wonderful by using it to take shelter of the Lord. The greater, in one sense, the greater the pain that he had, it forced him into great determination. He was a warrior, it was by his nature. He was one individual who was greatly determined. Greatly determined to what? To take shelter of Krishna, to gain his material desire. Now, he walked out the door of the palace into the forest, and while normally, well, we would imagine he would be in such a difficult position, but actually Krishna had noticed his determination to take shelter of him, and Krishna inspired Narada Muni to instruct him. And the first thing Narada Muni did before instructing him was give him some instructions, but not the suitable instructions for Dhruva. In one sense, he gave Dhruva instructions more elevated than Dhruva was capable of following, but in another sense, he instructed him away from what was really what Dhruva should have been doing, which is what Dhruva wanted to do. He instructed him away from immediately taking shelter of Krishna. Taking shelter of Krishna means, practically speaking, what does it mean? Excuse me?
Sharanagati.
Yes, and what does Sharanagati mean? Taking shelter of Krishna. Yes. We're caught in a loop. We're going to have to reboot. What does taking shelter mean?
To accept Krishna as my protector?
Protector and guardian. That's in essence what it means to surrender. That's what it means in essence to surrender. Go tripte varanam tata. To accept Krishna as the one whom your life is based on, and your constitutional nature or position is to please him. That is what taking shelter means. And if we don't take shelter of Krishna, we take shelter of other conceptions of where, of who we are and where our happiness lies. So Dhruva walked out the door, got instructions from Narada Muni, But he told Narada Muni he couldn't follow Narada Muni's instructions because his heart was contaminated too much by ignorance. What did he mean that it was contaminated too much by ignorance? It means that he was angry. He wanted revenge. He wanted this great kingdom. And because of his the pain that he had experienced, the insult caused him to want to retaliate. That is ignorance. It is ignorance. It is illusion. It is a mode of material nature that causes us further suffering. The result of actions in the mode of goodness, which seem to be very difficult in the beginning, are like nectar in the end. The result of activities in the mode of passion, which appear very sweet and wonderful in the beginning, but they are like poison in the end. And the result of activities in the mode of ignorance, they are suffering in the beginning, and they cause even still deeper suffering in the end. So Dhruva shouldn't act in the mode of ignorance, trying to get even, trying to get revenge, trying to retaliate, wishing ill for others. That was the first thing his mother told him. But yet, he found his heart contaminated by that mood. And when you're in a particular mood, what can you do about it? You can know what's right, the right thing, but you may feel yourself unable to do it. But he told Narada, please instruct me so that I will be able to gain what I want. So that was his saving grace, in a sense. He was looking for Krishna and he took shelter of a great representative of Krishna. With that powerful determination, he took shelter of Narada. And what did the shelter mean? What did taking shelter and determination mean? It meant that Narada gave him instructions. And Dhruva, as we shall hear today, followed them perfectly. Because this is the other side of what it practically means to be determined to take shelter of Krishna. To be determined not to remain in material consciousness. It means following. It means being determined to follow the instructions that are given to us. And in that sense, because we give up our own concept to some degree of what we should do, why do we give up our own concept? Why did Dhruva give up his own concept? Because he knew that he didn't have the capacity to gain what he desired. He didn't have the capacity himself to gain what he desired. So therefore, he took shelter and took protection from the instructions of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, and this is what we heard yesterday, gave him in very essential form the same instructions that each and every one of us get in Krishna consciousness. To keep our consciousness as clean as possible, to worship the deity, to chant the mantra, to become absorbed in the service of Krishna. Does anyone remember any other instructions? To hear, yes. Bathe in Yamuna, that was the cleanliness. And also to hear Krishna Kata, Krishna Anukata, to hear the pastimes of the different incarnations of the Lord. Because spiritual life is really based more than anything else on this one thing, hearing about Krishna. Because as we hear about Krishna, our consciousness becomes purified. And what does it mean that the consciousness becomes purified? It means that the lesser desires, the lower desires that we have become lesser. they don't become as powerful. And the higher desires we have become more dominant. And this is exactly what we want to happen. We want to learn how to desire properly, because according to how we desire, we act. If we really want something, I remember one very peculiar experience I had one day many years ago, although 1996, I had just gotten a new computer. And this is when the first portable computer I had, it was called a K-Pro. It was a CPM machine. Did any of you ever see a CPM machine? This was the operating system before MS-DOS took over, and then Windows knocked that out, and etc. CPM, that's how old I am. And it was this big. It was sort of a portable computer. It was this big. The screen was that big. I had the first computer in Vrindavan. It was my claim to fame. And then gradually the computers got smaller, and then they got, and it had a CRT screen even. It didn't have a LCD screen even. They didn't have those in those days. And then finally, when we waited long enough, probably 15 years later, they had sort of big kind of laptops that had color LCD screens. And it was wonderful. And I was going to get my first one. Just imagine the ecstasy in my heart after carrying around this huge K-Pro. And then finally, I had my computer with its LCD color screen and a CD drive and everything. No, it didn't have a CD drive. But then I had that, and I was in Europe. I was in Rutherdijk in Belgium. And the devotee I was staying with, I went to visit him, and I was so happy that I had this computer. And then I went to visit a friend, another devotee, and he had almost the same computer, but his had a CD drive that played Prabhupada's music, played his bhajans. Now this is so common nowadays, it's hard to imagine why I became so envious. But suddenly my computer was completely useless. And I didn't desire it any longer. And I wanted, and I didn't really even consciously think about it, but this is the nature of meditating on the objects, the nature of desiring, is that these desires subtly through our eyes or through our ears or through our mind, they enter our consciousness. And suddenly I want. Whether I need it or not doesn't make any difference. All that is relevant is I want. And when that desire enters the heart, it is just a matter of time before I get it. This is the way the material nature works. I want, I desire, and it's just a matter of time. I want to hang glide, fly through the air on a very silent way, riding the wind currents. I see people doing it, and I want to see what that experience is, and it's just a matter of time before I do it. Either as a human or a bird. It is so serious what we desire. It dictates our future. Saratat bhava bharata. Sara means always. Whatever mood, what's filling our consciousness at the time we leave our body especially. But even in this life, according to how we desire, that pushes us in one direction or another. So the process of Krishna consciousness is not to stop desiring. That's impossible, practically speaking. And the meditators, the jnanis, the advaitavadis, the impersonalists who meditate and through their meditation try to slow down their minds. Did anyone here ever be that, were they anyone that kind of a meditator? Who tried to slow down their mind and stop their mind and enter into, make the mind very quiet and enter into sort of a state of no desire and no activity of the mind? No? Yes. So you can do that to some degree. One can do that to some degree. And the result is quite wonderful, actually, because the mind gives us so much trouble. So just to stop it is such a relief, and it brings such peace to the consciousness. But of course the problem is you cannot stay in that state of mind. And anything at any time can disrupt you and pull you right out. And then you're stuck again, caught again, desiring, and that's just what you want to avoid. And the whole universe is against you, in the sense that the universe is trying to fill you with desires, parading sense objects before your eyes continuously. And therefore that type of a meditation is not at all recommended. It's practical. But in Krishna consciousness, we don't say stop desiring, because we say it is the actual nature of the soul to desire. The soul is alive, it has consciousness. Desiring means I want. But in Krishna consciousness, what we do, we try to do, is change the quality of those desires. From desiring in the realm of shadows, the realm where there is no true substance, and inflaming our desires on the spiritual level to become extremely desirous, extremely, fully, powerfully wanting to please Krishna in so many ways, to fall in love with Krishna in so many ways. My Prabhupada once told me, it is my desire that everyone in the universe becomes Krishna consciousness. And he wasn't exaggerating. Now that is a big desire. Not even everyone on earth, but everyone in the universe, he said. Now that is extreme desiring. And he wasn't. And he was trying always to push to fulfill that level of desire. Always he's pushing. Because his own power and quality of his desiring was so intense. And according to how we desire, because if our desire is extreme, our whole life will align itself behind that desire. If our desire is, I'd like a Ferrari. Do they have Ferraris in Israel?
Maybe two.
I would like the third Ferrari, and then I'll blow up the other two. I have only one. Anyone can dream about it, but when one has such an intense desire that he lines up his whole life around achieving that, then he will get it very quickly, because the universe will reciprocate. So the process of Krishna consciousness means to desire very strongly the pleasure of Krishna, and to love Krishna and to serve him very strongly in the process of getting that is the process of Krishna consciousness that we follow, sadhana bhakti. And that's what Narada Muni gave to Dhruva. The process of inflaming his Krishna conscious desires by chanting the mantra. What mantra was it?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And to make the form of the Lord and hear about the glorious incarnations of the Lord and how they acted, how they interacted with their devotees, those who love them. Those exchanges between the Lord and his beloved devotees are very, very sweet. It's just what we've been longing for. And always clean, so that the contaminations of passion and ignorance, those pushings, have less of a chance to dominate the consciousness, to eat always prasadam, so that the consciousness, body and mind, become purified. So now, Dhruva leaves and goes to what's place?
Madhuban.
What does madhu mean?
Sweet.
Sweet or honey. And the way that they say honey is madhu. And I can't remember the actual Sanskrit term or Hindi term. If someone speaks very sweetly, is capable of talking his way in and outside of everything, they say his tongue is coated with honey. Honey tongue. So Dhruva left for Madhuvan. Soon as he circumambulated Narada, and left for Madhuvan. And with that powerful determination, that laser-like determination, it was going to be focused on his goal, but on the processes given to him by Narada Muni. And he had full faith, because of who Narada Muni was, that if he simply followed those processes, he would achieve success. Because Narada Muni was an experienced practitioner. He had actually, this is described in the first canto, he had actually followed the path himself. And he had achieved success in a very wonderful way. But I won't talk too much about that now. So now we will hear what, in some verses, there's three parts to this class. And we will hear in some verses what Dhruva Maharaj did. But before we hear that, we'll hear what Narada Muni did. In text 64, it describes how soon as Dhruva left, Narada Muni went to the place of Dhruva's father, the palace of King Uttanapada. And remember what had happened. Dhruva had tried to climb upon the throne of Uttanapada, and Saruchi had chastised him heavily and criticized him practically in a very arrogant way. And Uttanapada just stood there silently, not saying anything in defense of his son. And then what happened? What happened next? Dhruva went to his mother, and then what happened next? He left the palace and went alone. A 5-year-old boy left the palace and went alone to the forest. And in the forest were what? Of course, Narada Muni. But what else was there?
Tigers.
And snakes. And?
Mosquitoes.
And mosquitoes and lizards and what else?
Lions.
Monkeys. And elephants. Yes, a very dangerous place. And ants and spiders. And he was a 5-year-old boy. So how do you think his father felt after that? Yes. Oh, what have I done? Why didn't I tell that woman to be quiet? You know, who knows? You know, he was just lamenting and lamenting and lamenting. He felt terrible. Just imagine what it would be like if you chastised one of your children very heavily. And they left home and went into the forest. And you didn't know where they were. You'd just be worried and worried and thinking about them. Yeah, it would be terrible. Your heart would be broken. You wouldn't feel like doing anything. So Narada Muni went to Uttanapada for several reasons. One is he wanted to reassure Uttanapada that everything was going to be okay. But he had his own way of doing it. He went to the king and said, this is text 64. My dear king, your face appears to be withering up and you look like you've been thinking about something for a very long time. What is that? Did he already know the answer to his questions? Indeed he did. Have you been hampered in following your path of religious rights, economic development, and sense gratification? Is this what's disturbing you? Narada Muni knew very well that was not what was disturbing him. But he wanted the king to say it. And the king said, he replied, O best of the Brahmins, I am very much addicted to my wife, and I am so fallen that I have abandoned all merciful behavior. When we act improperly, later, if we are at all a sensitive person, we lament. I am so fallen that I have abandoned all merciful behavior, even to my son, who is only 5 years old. I have banished him and his mother, even though he is a great soul and a great devotee. My dear Brahman, he continued, the face of my son was just like a lotus flower. And I'm thinking of his precarious position, his dangerous situation. He is unprotected, and he might be very hungry. He might have lain down somewhere in the forest, and the wolves may have attacked him to eat his body. Well, he must have been so mentally tortured, thinking like this. Alas, to see how I was conquered by my wife. Just imagine my cruelty. Out of love and affection, the boy was trying to get up on my lap, but I did not receive him, nor did I even pat him for a moment. It would have been so easy for me just to have shown him even the slightest bit of affection and reciprocation for his desire, but I was so cruel that I did not. Just imagine how hard-hearted I am. And to this, Narada Muni replied, my dear king, please do not be aggrieved about your son. He is well protected. You did not protect him. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean that he has no protection. He is well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although you have no actual information of his influence, his reputation is already spread all over the world. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Please listen carefully, because this is relevant for us. Because when we think of placing ourselves in the hand of Krishna, to surrendering to him, to accepting him as our protector and our guardian, we tend to become fearful. And then, when we try to act in that way even, we tend not to do it very seriously out of fear. But listen to Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes when we hear that great sages and devotees go to the forest and engage themselves in devotional service or meditation, we become surprised. How can one live in the forest and not be taken care of by anyone? But the answer given by a great authority, Narada Muni, is that such persons are well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There was an old story of Ramanujacharya, that one of his first disciples was upset one day because he had been following the principles and practices for some time, and he didn't feel like he had gotten close to Krishna, to the Lord. So he approached his teacher, Narada Muni. Who was his teacher? Everyone was listening, how nice. And said that I want to find God. I have to find him now. I've been practicing and practicing, but I want to find him. And he said, I will tell you how you can find God within 1 week. He said, how? And he expected him to tell him something very complicated. But instead he said, walk south for 1 week and then come back. That was all he said. Walk south for 1 week and then you can come back. So he was a very faithful, obedient student. He didn't tell Ramanuja, didn't tell him to go home, get your sleeping bag, get a month's worth of food and put it in your knapsack, take credit cards with you, take your mobile phone, take this, take that. He said, go travel south. That was all. And the student just started immediately, he offered his obeisances, and he started traveling south. So he walked and walked, and then night came. Where am I going to stay? And suddenly, somehow or another, by the grace of God, there was a place for him to stay. And there was food. And the next morning, he started walking south. And then when he was hungry, very hungry, somehow or another, there was food, there was water, there was a place to stay when he needed to rest for the night, and he kept on walking south. And day after day, he walked south, night after night, he slept, he ate, he had water, he had food. And he began to understand that actually, I'm being taken care of. Because I'm not always trying to manipulate the world to take care of me as if I'm the one taking care of me. But he understood deeply by placing himself in the hands of his spiritual master's instructions, which placed him in the hands of the Lord, that actually he was being taken care of. And by the time 7 days had passed, he understood. It wasn't that he saw Krishna in front of him, but he understood the unseen hand of the Lord was there, always, constantly caring for him. And he came back, and all of his friends, the other students, said, well, did you see God? Did you find God? He said, yes. How could one live in the forest and not be taken care of by anyone? But the answer given by a great authority, Narada Muni, is that such persons are well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sharanagati or surrender means acceptance or firm belief that wherever the surrendered soul lives, he is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is never alone or unprotected. Have any of you ever had that experience? We want to live in such a way that we are living in the hands of Krishna always. That life is exciting. That is being alive. And that feeling of life is what we are longing for. Otherwise, we find ourselves half dead, half alive, flapping a little bit, and it is boring. Same thing every day. We want to be alive. And this type of a life of Sharanagati, dependence on Krishna, is real life. Now, how do we practically apply that to our lives? Does that mean everyone should walk south?
Yes, probably.
Huh?
East. That's right.
Well, maybe at this time, maybe west. No, west is a little too close.
North.
North is... Actually, you can't walk in any direction for more than about an hour or two and be safe around here. And where? Where? In Israel?
Yeah?
And did Maru Mangal live?
I think that when he starts reading one of Prabhupada's books.
One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you're talking about Bhagavan, realizing Krishna, and I have not yet realized Brahman. So I understand Bhagavan is the highest. So first I should realize Bhagavan, Brahman, and then after I realize Brahman, then I'll come back and say Hare Krishna, and then I will try to realize Bhagavan. And Prabhupada's answer was very simple. Are you chanting your rounds? And the devotee said, no. His answer was also very simple. But Krishna consciousness means to live like this, actually. Because reality is that we are dependent on Krishna. And to live in that way is Krishna consciousness. Dhruva Maharaja's affectionate father thought his young boy, only 5 years old, to be in a very precarious position in the jungle. But Narada Muni assured him, you do not have sufficient information about the influence of your son. And then Prabhupada ends his purport in a way that gives us some reassurance and hints that we don't have to travel south, but we have to do one thing. Anyone who engages in devotional service anywhere within this universe is never unprotected. And putting that in the positive, he is always protected. So the idea is to be engaged in devotional service. I'm serving. And that's where my consciousness is. And Krishna will protect such a devotee. It's not that we wander around doing nothing, expecting that Krishna is going to protect us, but we engage or act as his servant, regardless of who we are, where we are, what the externals of our circumstances are. And therein, as Krishna's servant, Krishna, the beloved of his devotees, always protects his devotees. That is what Krishna consciousness means in a very basic way. My dear king, Narada continued, your son is very competent. He will perform activities which would be impossible even for great kings and sages. Very soon he will complete his task and come back home. You should know that he will also spread your reputation all over the world. Prabhupada explains at the end of his purport here. What was the task that Dhruva Maharaj undertook? What was his task? He was performing those activities that Narada had told him, but what was the purpose of those activities? Because we should keep that in our mind when we perform our activities, whether it's chanting japa, or working, or cooking, or hearing a class, or helping others, or whatever the activity, or playing a musical instrument, or singing, or reading, or hearing, or speaking. What is the purpose of it? Yes, exactly. The most difficult, what was the task that Dhruva Maharaj undertook? He was performing those activities, and we are supposed to be performing our activities in such a way that Krishna is pleased. Krishna in the center. Then we become pleased, in fact. Prabhupada continues, the most difficult task in life is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why is it so difficult? That's what I'm always asking myself. Why is it so difficult? And what's the answer? Because I have a big, big false sense of who I am. And I don't really want to satisfy Krishna. I really want to satisfy me. I'm keeping myself in the center. So to satisfy Krishna is difficult because of the nature of the false ego. And Dhruva Maharaj would be able to do that. He was so determined and fixed, and again, his determination was fixed on what? On following the words that Narada Muni had told him, following the instructions of Narada Muni. We must remember that Dhruva Maharaj was not fickle, chanchal, flickering mind. He was determined to execute his service and then come back. Every devotee, therefore, should be determined that in this life he will be able to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by that process go back home, back to Godhead. That is the perfection of the highest mission of life. So the cost in Krishna consciousness is this, to be determined. And that basically means sincere. So when we try our best, very often we are confronted with our insincerity. That's the result when you're trying. That's the first and primary result. If one becomes confronted with his own insincerity, his own mixed motives. Yes, I want Krishna, but I want other things also. Which means I don't really want Krishna. To serve Krishna. I have other desires as well. So therefore, then the next result, if we're doing well, we become confronted with our insincerity, and then we become humble. Instead of making up a whole new philosophy to justify my situation, we become humble and understand we need help, and then we call out to Krishna to help us despite our lack and deficiencies. And then we do quite well. We make progress. The great Maitreya continued, he was narrating this discussion to Vidura. The king, Uttanapad, after being advised by Narada Muni, practically gave up all duties in relation with his kingdom, which was very vast and wide, opulent like the goddess of fortune, and he simply began to think of his son Dhruva. Now what happens next? So we've heard one point of view, what happens to Dhruva, what would happen to King Uttanapada. But now what did Dhruva do? Now we can imagine, after we've heard about Dhruva, that he's going to follow these instructions very fixedly, with fixed mind, with fixed determination. But please listen carefully to exactly what he was doing, because it is astounding. Elsewhere, the elsewhere means in Madhuvan practically, Dhruva Maharaj, having arrived at Madhuvan, took his bath in the river Yamuna and observed fasting in the night with great care and attention. We should do all our fasting at night while we're asleep. It's a lot easier. And after that, at least in English, the first food that you eat in the new day is called breakfast. You're breaking your fast. What's the name in Hebrew for breakfast? Huh? What does it mean?
Morning.
So after that, as advised by the great sage Narada, he engaged himself in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's purport is very interesting here, about how important it is to follow the instructions that are given by one's spiritual master. And the spiritual master tailors the instructions according to the individual need of the disciple. And if he follows those instructions very seriously, he becomes perfect. So this is what Dhruva did. He arrived. For the first month, Dhruva Maharaj ate only fruits and berries on every third day, only to keep his body and soul together. And in this way, he progressed in his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says in the final paragraph of the purport here, that's the beginning of his austerities, eating just fruits and berries that were available every third day. Prabhupada says in this purport, it is our duty to remember always that in comparison to Dhruva Maharaj, we are insignificant. We cannot do things like that. We cannot do anything like what Dhruva Maharaj did for self-realization, because we are absolutely incompetent to execute such service. We are absolutely incompetent, as opposed to absolutely wonderful. We're absolutely incompetent to execute such service. But by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we have been given all concessions possible for this age. So at least we should always remember that neglect of our prescribed duties in devotional service will not make us successful in the mission we have undertaken. It is our duty to follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj, for he was very determined. That is what we should become. We should become determined to follow, not eat berries every third day, because if we take that path, we're going to very soon be eating dry leaves like Dhruva Maharaj every 2 months or something like that. We'll drop out very quickly. But according to the processes that have been practically given to us by Prabhupada and adjusted according to the realities of the time and place, we should be determined to follow that. And success will be ours. It is our duty to follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj, for he was very determined. If we want the result, we should follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj. If that desire burns brightly in us to get to Krishna, then we will naturally be very determined. Dhruva Maharaj wanted something. His desire was strong. I'm making this point again and again. So, because if we say from now on I'm going to be determined. If we don't actually have a spiritual desire that's burning brighter and brighter and brighter, we will not be able to maintain anything in a determined way. We should be determined to finish our duties in executing devotional service in this life. We should not wait for another life to finish our job. That was the first month. The second month, Dhruva ate only every 6 days. And what did he eat? His edibles were dried grass and leaves. And that is with no salt. Thus he continued his worship. He was doing all his duties, and this is all he was eating. In the third month, he drank water only every 9 days. Thus he remained completely entranced. Now, when we're thinking about eating leaves or eating, drinking water only every 9 days, one could also think, well, what is that? How is that really spiritual? What's really spiritual about that? It's just some people have an ability to fast, some people don't, but what's actually spiritual, religious, what does that have to do with God?
We're also chanting the mantra.
Yes, true. But this is mentioned here to remind us how fixed in determination he was. Because to act in this way, you have to be unwavering. Because the mind is going to say, I want something to eat. I mean, at least my mind does. I want something to eat and I want it now. And he was so fixed, the mind was not making him quiver or waver at all. So we don't have to perform those kind of austerities. But that fixedness of mind on what we do have to do is actually essential, because if we're always quivering and wavering, maybe I should do this, and maybe I should do that, and maybe I should do this, and maybe I should do that, and maybe I should do this, and maybe I should do that, you never get anywhere. It's like if you're walking down the road, and the road goes this way, And you walk a little that way. Maybe I should walk this way. No, and then you walk back. And maybe I should walk that way. No, maybe I should. You just never get anywhere. So that's how we, not we, that's how some people tend to perform their devotional service. And we don't focus the mind, especially on the chanting and the japa and the kirtan and the hearing and the reading. And then we wonder why we don't get anywhere. This is why. We don't take shelter of the process. So, to be able to do the thing to watch in the internal thing to be aware of while Dhruva is performing these incredible external austerities, is that how strong his internal mind must be to be able to do this. So when he, just like nowadays, people are walking down the street and they're so, or even driving their cars and they're talking on their mobile phone. You see that continuously. So what I've noticed is that everywhere people are, they're not. The way that the whole society is being is that everyone isn't where they are. They're always where they're not, if you can understand what I'm talking about. So that means they're walking down the street, but they have no concentration, no focus on anything to do what they're doing. Their minds are somewhere else. So everyone is always somewhere else than where they are. And Dhruva was not like that at all. He was focused, very heavily focused on the duties that he was doing with the purpose of satisfying Krishna. His mind was unwavering, it was unflickering. When he was performing his asanas, he was performing his asanas. He wasn't on his phone. He wasn't talking to people. He wasn't doing this. When he was worshipping, he was worshipping. And it was always for the purpose of Krishna, pleasing Krishna. So although that's not exactly described here, only his fixedness, only his fasting is described, but what we should be understanding is his fixedness in mind, because you can't do these things unless your mind is incredibly fixed. And that was only the third month. In the fourth month, Dhruva Maharaj became a complete master of the breathing exercises, the pranayama. And he thus inhaled air only every 12th day. In this way, he became completely fixed. There it is, the fixedness in his position, and worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mind, and this is the purpose of the pranayama and the pratyahara, to focus the mind, and then when one has mastered this, one focuses one's consciousness fully on the Lord in the heart, as was described, on his beauty, and one consciousness, fixed, focused, intense, heavy, becomes fully absorbed in him. This, by the way, is not, this mechanical type of method is not the method of Krishna consciousness, by the way. But the product of focused mind is the method. Because Krishna consciousness means the mind becomes absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasata bhavato mati. So he became fixed. That was in the fourth month. By the fifth month, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand on only one leg. Just as a column stands. See, you could try and do this. I mean, not right this second. And maybe not before you go to bed tonight. Because if you try to stand on one leg, what's that called? Tadasana or something? You know that, tasana? Stand on one leg? Vikasan? And what do you have to do to be able to successfully do that? On what?
On one point.
What's the one point? Okay, but you have to focus your mind. The way I learned to do those things, you have to focus it on the one leg. If your consciousness becomes focused on the one leg that's actually standing, and you can actually, then you won't move. You have to put your consciousness on the leg that everything is resting on. And you'll see that your consciousness starts moving and your body starts moving. Because we don't have the ability, because we're not trained, because we're trained to always be where we're not and doing five things at once. And everyone's consciousness and minds are so splayed all over the universe, and therefore no one's happy because of things like that. So he was able to stand. So the description is of the externals, but the meaning is internal of what he was doing. He was able to stand like a column stands, without a column doesn't move, without motion, and he concentrated his mind fully, not on his leg, but on the Parabrahman. And it was as steady and focused as his consciousness, as his non-moving body, his consciousness was focused. To accomplish anything in this world, you have to be focused. You can't be unfocused. He completely controlled his senses and their objects, and in this way he fixed his mind without diversion to anything else upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dhyayam Bhagavato Rupam. His consciousness is meditating upon the form of Bhagavan. When Dhruva Maharaj thus captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so his consciousness was focused fully on the Supreme Lord in his heart, who was the refuge. So he captured him in a sense with his consciousness. So his consciousness, he's focused on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was the refuge of the total material creation, and who was the master of all living entities, and the three worlds began to tremble. So when one focuses one's consciousness, one becomes heavy, a heavy person, fixed, heavy. And because he was focusing his consciousness on the Supreme Lord, he became so heavy that the whole universe began to tremble. Prabhupada says in the last line of his purport, a pure devotee of the Lord can surpass yogic perfections by performing activities which can make the whole universe tremble. Because what does it mean to be a pure devotee? That one's consciousness is fully focused on the Lord in love, in devotion, bhakti yoga. As Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son, kept himself steadily standing on one leg, the pressure of his big toe, because his consciousness was so fully focused on the Supreme Lord, the pressure of his big toe pushed down the earth. Just when you're standing, just sometimes you move a little bit this way and a little bit that way. So when you move a little bit this way, the earth moved down 2.5 inches. So he wasn't using metric measurements. 2.5 inches. How much? That's like this. How many? How much is that in centimeters?
7.
Okay, there seems to be a disagreement here. But anyway, about this much. There's the authoritarian answer. Okay, and he would move, and the earth would move this way, and then he would tilt a little bit that way, the whole earth would move. Just like an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. So that's what was going on from the point when Dhruva Maharaj was performing his austerities. And there's 1, 2, 3 more verses in the purport in the chapter that describes what it was like in the universe. Because remember, he wasn't breathing, and he was so heavy that he choked up all the breathing, the air in the whole universe, and the demigods became very disturbed. The prophet says at the end of his purport to 80, the example of Dhruva Maharaj, when he closed the holes of his personal body and therefore closed the breathing holes of the total universe, clearly indicates that a devotee, by his personal devotional service, can influence all the people of the whole world to become devotees of the Lord. Because again, devotional service means a focusing of the consciousness on Krishna. And one, in a sense, one becomes one with Krishna. And Krishna is unlimitedly heavy. One keeps one's individuality, but when Krishna is in one's consciousness, one becomes very heavy. And therefore, and heavy and influential. So such a person can influence all the people of the whole world to become devotees of the Lord. If there is only one pure devotee in pure Krishna consciousness, he can change the total consciousness of the world into Krishna consciousness. This is not very difficult to understand if we study the behavior of Dhruva Maharaj. So what did the demigods do when they were choked due to lack of oxygen? The particular quality of the demigods or any devotees is that when there's difficulty, they turn to Krishna. And that's just what they did. They went to the Lord and they said, "You are the refuge of all moving and non-moving entities. We feel all living entities to be suffocating, their breathing processes choked up. We have never experienced such a thing. Since you are the ultimate shelter of all surrendered souls, we have therefore approached you. Kindly save us from this danger." And then the final verse and half a purport that we'll read is this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "My dear demigods, do not be perturbed by this. Don't be disturbed. It is due to the severe austerities and full determination of the son of King Uttanapada, who is now fully absorbed in thought of me. He has obstructed the universal breathing process." So the Lord was aware of that Dhruva Maharaja's consciousness was through his intense practice of yoga, fully absorbed in him. "He has obstructed the universal breathing process. You can safely return to your respective homes. I shall stop this boy in his severe acts of austerities and he will be saved from this situation." Why was Dhruva Maharaj doing this? To please the Lord. And what did he want?
The kingdom.
But what was the intermediary step? He wanted to meet him. So the way that the Lord was going to stop Dhruva Maharaj, because Dhruva wanted to meet him, was to come before him. And then Dhruva Maharaj would be satisfied and stop. And that's what happens beginning the next chapter. Let me just read the last part of the purport of Prabhupada and then we'll stop. "By pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one pleases everyone. Just as by watering the root of the tree, one satisfies every branch, twig, and leaf of the tree. If one can attract..." Please listen. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, one naturally attracts the whole universe because Krishna is the supreme cause of the universe. All the demigods were afraid of being totally vanquished by suffocation, but the Personality of Godhead assured them that Dhruva Maharaj was a great devotee of the Lord and was not about to annihilate everyone in the universe. A devotee is never envious of other living entities." So Dhruva wasn't trying to harm anyone. He wanted to please Krishna. He wanted Krishna to see Krishna. He was determined to perform the activities just as Narada Muni had said, so that Krishna would come, and therefore he would ask Krishna for what he wanted, which was a kingdom, a great kingdom, the greatest kingdom that ever existed. But what will happen next? We shall see. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, now I'm going to ask a question that's easier than the usual question I ask. But not easy, just easier. Who remembers anything from this class? It's easier than asking what happened yesterday. Usually we remember the last thing that was said. A devotee is not envious of anyone. Anyone remember anything? Yes.
King Prasad felt very grieved about what he did to his
friend. Thank you.
Also have a question about that.
Wait. Okay, you saved that question. You remember that. And we'll ask you in a moment. Anyone remember anything else from the class? Yes.
I remember the story about the disciple of Ramanuja Acharya, that he told him to go south to find God. And
Gopal, go south. You won't do that to him, will you?
And after 1 week, realized that God
supplied
him everything and he understood
God's
standard
before
that, of course.
Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
I remember that when he said that we are insignificant compared to
Dhruva Maharaj. Yes, yes.
So we just we don't have to do all these austerities, we just have to do our spiritual duty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh?
Absolutely.
Because usually we usually absolutely wonderful or something, and but instead we are absolutely incompetent to do a jubilee. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes. And what was the last part? And this is Krishna consciousness. To serve Krishna, as we, because we usually think, if I serve Krishna, well, who's going to take care of me? And the answer is, the one who you're serving. And the question is, do you really believe that? And if the answer is no, then just walk south. Or north, or east, or west, or stay where you are and try and serve and find out. Anyone else remember anything else? Yes?
A lot of today's society is not what it's at.
Is?
Today's society, people are not where they are. They're always on the mobile phone or on the laptop.
Isn't it peculiar? It's true. No one's conscious of what they're doing anymore. Very dangerous, actually. Anyone remember anything else?
If one is focused on Krishna, you can change the overall by the consciousness.
Wonderful. Yes?
Take shelter of Krishna means to please Krishna and to make Krishna our goal in life.
Please, Krishna, making please, Krishna. Thank you. Okay, now your question.
Why did King Dasarath, when he understood that he has made a mistake with his son, why didn't he just go after him to the forest and look for him? If he was afraid for war,
I can't say exactly, but the forest was very big. He was one little boy. How would he find him? And how long was this after? So very quickly Narada Muni came to him and told him, don't worry about your boy, he's protected by the Lord. So then Uttanapa just thought about him, but didn't go. He thought about him continuously. He thought about him and didn't do anything else. But it would be a completely different story, wouldn't it? A different pastime. Dhruva goes to the forest and then his father comes out and takes him home. The whole world would be different. Wouldn't it be as good a place as it is now? Any other questions? Yes. Yes,
please. Narada Muni instructed Dhruva Maharaj in the art of Ashtanga Yoga. But according to his age, he could as well instruct him in the art of Bhakti Yoga.
But he did actually instruct him in Bhakti, but through Ashtanga Yoga. Because it was focused on pleasing Krishna. That was the first thing that he told them, is have your mind absorbed in Krishna. Because yoga itself is neutral. And the Paramatma doesn't eternally exist in the spiritual world. So when one gets to... So it was bhakti. He stuck him in bhakti. Basically. But through the process of Ashtanga Yoga.
Which is very, very, very difficult.
He gave it the process to the right man, because he did it. It was a different age.
If that means that because it is different age, the way people are built and inclined mentally, they don't want to take the easy and easier process, which is even sometimes more powerful, but because this is the inclination to take the hardship.
When people practice yoga, mostly they're just doing it to keep their body healthy so they can enjoy their life. They're not practicing yoga at all. They don't really have a spiritual purpose in it. It's not actually yoga, it's exercise. It's very good for the health. It's not yoga. Because yoga, there are eight limbs, not just one limb. Ashtanga. Yes?
How can we consider that we just focus on Krishna, we didn't do anything to Krishna?
But that's also a focus. That's also service, thinking about Krishna. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Thinking about Krishna. Also hearing about Krishna, like with hearing and speaking, that's also devotional service. So devotional service doesn't only mean working. Hearing, chanting is also, these are the main limbs or main parts of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, and shravana, kirtana, smarana, and vishnu.
You were saying that the greatness of devotees is when in difficulty we turn towards Krishna.
That's the meaning of being a devotee.
So on a practical level, what does that actually mean?
Well, we're serving Krishna. First, devotee means service. Everyone should be doing some service according to their capacity. And naturally, the way the universe is, there's always difficulty and hardship when we're trying to do something in this world. So as we try to act in such a way to please Krishna, when the difficulties and hardships come, we turn to Krishna more deeply and hold on more tightly to our chanting, our dependence on Him. More tightly means more consciously. What do you want?
But I'm saying when we're in the difficulty itself.
Yes, what do we do? We pray to Krishna to help us. We don't run from Krishna mentally, consciously. We hold on tightly to Him. We depend on Him. Do you understand what I mean? Because when we're in difficulty, usually the mind becomes very much afraid and it runs to where it thinks its safety is. So when the mind runs to Krishna, and nowhere else, that is a mark of surrender. Just understanding that no one else, nothing else but Krishna can protect me. So Krishna, 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 like Draupadi. That wonderful pastime of Draupadi that's described in the Mahabharata and explained also in Rupa Goswami's Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Prabhupada's Next Devotion, how Draupadi was in an assembly and the kings called her in and they wished to embarrass the Pandava family and her by stripping her naked. And she called out to Krishna, she called out to Krishna, she called out to Krishna to help. With two hands in the air, she called out to Krishna. And Krishna protected her. But he also said, with Draupadi's calling out to me, by her one calling out, all Govinda, with a full shelter, she has placed me forever in her debt. Yeah. Is that clear? Instead of running away from Krishna, we run towards Krishna and hold on tightly. Because the external world is out of our control, in fact. That's reality. We can't control the universe. We have an inflated concept that we're in control of a little section of the universe, our life, our house, something like that. But it's an illusion. We're not in control of that either. In fact, we're secondary controllers. We can control as much as Krishna allows us to control. And as soon as he withdraws his primary control, everything in our life goes out of control. So that's very, very frightening to a conditioned soul. It's terrifying. If you're walking down the street and there's some danger, some car is coming, and you move out of the way and you save yourself with your skill. But sometimes in life we find ourselves in situations where our skills, our abilities, our intelligence, our agility is simply insufficient because the universe is pressing down in a way that it's too hard for us to deal with, impossible for us to deal with. Then what do? As soon as when things go out of control, terror enters the mind because it likes to be in the illusion that I'm in control. So what we have to learn how to do, and this is everyone's task, is to learn how to depend on Krishna. Because it will go out of control at some point. I once had the experience of riding a motor scooter down the road in Vrindavan, on the road to Govanan, or from Govanan, and there was a speed bump, a motor scooter, and I was old already, and I wasn't expert at riding motor scooters, and they have these little small puny wheels that are really a pain in the neck. You know, they don't balance so easily. Did you ever ride a motor scooter? Any motor scooter riders?
Yeah.
With the little wheels? Motorcycles are easier. But in any case, we don't want to get into a comparative analysis. But there was a speed bump on the road. And I decided that I would go around it. And when I went around it, it became heavier. I mean, I was turned over to that side, and suddenly I found myself, and then suddenly everything in my mind started going in slow motion. And it seemed to be going really slow, and I was very conscious of everything. And I was going over, and I was thinking, hey, this isn't supposed to be happening. Wasn't following the usual script of what's supposed to be happening according to my conception. Things were going out of control. So naturally you start using your abilities to bring things back into control. But it kept going further out of control. And I kept going over further, and there was an embankment on the side of the road. And if you know the sides of the Vrindavan roads to Govanan, you know what's on the embankments that fell down? It's all these sticker bushes, bauble bushes as they call them. And what's interesting, glue is made out of their sap, in case you ever need some glue. In abundance there. But so I started going over, and I was thinking of, because I'm such a philosophical person, I was thinking, this is just like at the moments of death. You know, I'm not recovering. You know, you get sick and you usually, you catch a cold and then you do something or another and you recover. Or it gets a little bit worse and then you recover a little more. But then when it turns into some lung problem, and then you recover. But then it turns from a cold to a lung problem to pneumonia, and you're used to recovering. But one time, you're not going to recover. You're just going to go over. So that's what I did. I went over and over. And I landed, it was so wonderful. I landed in the bushes. How come wonderful things only happen to me and no one else? I landed in the bushes with the motorcycle on top of me, the motor scooter on top of me, and because there were all sticker bushes in there and it was tilting this way, I couldn't move at all because it was all sticker bushes. And then immediately, it was, these are the kind of things that happen in Vrindavan, which is not an ordinary place. Immediately, one of those temples, those three-wheelers came, was riding down the road, chug, 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 with the black smoke coming out the tailpipe, and it was filled with all these Brijbasi men, and they sort of just jumped right out of the temple and picked the motorcycle up immediately and picked me up, and it was over. And then they just got back in the motorcycle. I didn't even say hello, thank you or anything. They got in the tempo and they went away. It was, you know, one of those Vrindavan. Vrindavan is such a magical place. Such a mystical, magical place. If I was in New York, before I woke up, the motorcycle would be gone, my wallet would have been gone, and I would have had a big bump in my head. And maybe in Tel Aviv also, I don't know. But, you know, people don't usually stop and help you. Well, do they? Do they here?
Maybe sometimes they have to call the police.
Because if you stop, and help somebody, then he'll say, well, you're the one who broke my arm, and you'll find yourself with a court case against you or something, too. It's all a crazy world. But anyway, I learned something from many things from that. But one is, that's what death is like. You know, all the things, well, you're used to recovering. But there's going to be one time you don't recover. It just goes down and down and down and down. And then it's time to leave. So where does your mind go? We want it to go to Krishna, hold on tightly to Krishna. Because life will go out of control. It must go out of control. We're in the illusion that we're in control. And if we didn't have Krishna consciousness and weren't in the illusion that that life's in our control, we would go crazy immediately. We would be afraid to do anything. So we have the gift of illusion. But illusion doesn't stand. It's not strong in time. We have the gift of the illusion so that we can have the strength to find reality. And reality is the shelter of Krishna. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you very much. Tomorrow we have eating yoga instead of hearing yoga. And then next night, I think we have dancing yoga. Yes? Dancing and singing yoga. And also we'll have hearing yoga that night also.
And the next day we have japa yoga.
It's not, we'll do something very mysterious, I'm sure. We're going to take everyone out and give them motor scooters. And teach them how to fall over. We'll do something. We'll do either japa or the reading or something mysterious.
Prahlad Maharaj.
What about Prahlad Maharaj?
We don't
Did I say I was going to give a class on Prahlad Maharaj?
I thought you said that
Yuva Maharaj
and
that Mahaprabhu used to hear. Maybe next year, Prahlad Maharaj.
Yes, for 1 month, and you can give us
the. Then will you translate the commentaries? Did you translate today? You have to be careful when joking with the fellow with the microphone. Get me back. And you? Do you remember anything from the class? Or were you just playing over there? Do you remember anything? What? Huh? Oh, very good. Okay.